8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order. Members, we do have a quorum, so I'd like to start out with approval of the minutes. Representative Lestigard moves approval of the March 19th, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 19th, 2019 minutes are approved. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So the first bill is House File 1849. I think I've seen Chair Hornstein in the audience. And would someone care to move House File 1849? Representative Carlson moves House File 1849 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. And we do have an A1 amendment. So Representative Carlson moves the A1 amendment. And it looks to be pretty minor in nature. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Good morning, Representative Hornstein. Welcome to the committee, and please describe your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Marquardt, for hearing House File 1849. I was just talking with the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee that Representative Carlson reminded me that this is sort of an annual rite of spring, just like potholes and bill deadlines. I think I've had a version of this bill just about every term I've served. And the reason I do this bill, and it may be like the Hans Street bill, this could be the year, Mr. Chair. This could be the year where this is in law. The reason I do this bill is that I find it concerning that we have companies here headquartered in Minnesota that do hide their money in overseas tax havens. And while the numbers the amount of revenue isn't nearly as much as that we've seen at the federal level, it's still money that should be repatriated here in Minnesota. You know, on the national tax bill, I found it very encouraging that both parties addressed this practice doing something that's called deemed repatriation. And they recognized that there was so much revenue that was being hidden overseas that we needed to grab this revenue and bring it back to the United States Treasury coffers. And so this bill would do the same in Minnesota. And there's always a lot of interest in Section 2, Subdivision 5C, and that is, of course, the definition of tax haven. And that comes to us from the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD. And so this is the current list of tax havens. When I brought this bill did make it to the floor and passed off the floor, I believe, in 2007 or so. And at that time, Laura Broad was the lead for the GOP on taxes. And I knew I probably couldn't go toe-to-toe with her on some of the fine points of tax policy. So when she asked me to yield, I got quite nervous. But the question wasn't about the definition of unitary taxation or anything like that. It was, well, Representative Hornstein, Barbados should not be on the list. And, in fact, she was right. We had to delete Barbados, and Barbados is still not on the list, Mr. Chair. So that is really the bill. I know in the past I don't have a fiscal note, and maybe the staff can help me out, but this comes out to about, I think, either $38 million per biennium or annually, and I do believe that's money that should be going into our general fund. It's money that should be helping our schools, should be going to assist with health care and all the other things that we spend money on here in the state of Minnesota. So, and with that, I'd be happy to stand for questions. But this is just a simple way to repatriate money that is going in these tax havens. And by the way, Mr. Chair and members, you know, they're hidden there because, you know, these are jurisdictions that have no nominal taxes you know, operate with very little transparency, quite a bit of secrecy. And so I just don't think this is right. I just don't think this practice is right. And this is money that should be. We have hardworking Minnesotans that are paying their taxes, and I think these companies should do the same and not hide their money in these quite exotic locations if you want to take a vacation. A journalist once said that they wanted to cover the story so they could travel to all these places, but the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands, the Cook Islands, some very interesting locations around the globe, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Before we go to some questions here, there is a revenue estimate. It would show a revenue gain of about $85 million over the 2021 budget.
So this hasn't really changed over the years. It's kind of what I had thought it would be.
Very good. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. I'm not sure how there can be a revenue note on this bill. Chair Hornstein is amazing. He's been very, very persistent. And we've been doing this for many, many years, and I think he has frightened all of these countries, especially Liechtenstein, to not be a tax haven and open up for transparency. So, members, the list in my good friend Chair Hornstein's bill doesn't exist. They are all in compliance with transparency acts, and so I'm not sure how we're gaining revenue. I mean, I pulled all my money out of these countries. I have none in any of these countries. And so, Mr. Chair, how do we go forward, and how can there be a revenue note when none of these countries, there is no list? There was in 2000. Today there is no list. And I passed out the fact that they have improved the establishing effective exchange information tax matters. There is no list of tax havens today. So maybe the fiscal person could explain to me how there can be a revenue note when there's nobody on the list, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. I don't know if there's anyone fiscally that could answer that or not. I don't see anyone coming forward on that. Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question, Ms. Templin, is these are no longer tax havens.
Ms. Templin,
how did you come up with that number?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. What you have is the Department of Revenue's estimate before you with the estimated revenue gain. And what I can tell you is just what's on the revenue estimate, and they use the experience of a couple other states that had tax havens to scale the estimate to Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Templin,
Chair Davids,
it's magic. There are no countries on the list of tax havens at this time. So how can we generate revenue from a list that doesn't exist?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, the estimate, again, just works with the experience of other states. I can go back and get some more information, or I know the department is here as well and is probably fluent in kind of the experience of tax havens if necessary.
I see under subdivision 5C there's a list of tax havens in the bill. So, and I see what I have from Chair Davids, 38 jurisdictions will have made commitments to implement. And I don't know how that factors into this for sure.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Templin.
I do know that Oregon, the state of Oregon, has had tax havens and did collect revenue as well from tax havens when they were in place. And they had a list.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Montana did as well. I think you make a good point, Mr. Chair. you know, the OECD is the gold standard, and they have a list of tax havens. That's where this language comes from. And the list does change. It does change. You know, some countries then comply. Other countries are added. You know, there's a few. When we did get this bill on the floor, there was a bit of concern. The ambassador from Luxembourg wrote a note to us concerned that they were on the list, but, you know, tried to argue that they weren't. The ambassador from Latvia actually came from Washington to talk with me, and we had someone from the Consul General's office and from the United Kingdom, from Chicago, came up to talk with me because all of these islands in the English Channel are tax havens. So, you know, this isn't a concern. It is a debate in international economic development circles. But I hold by the OECD. And as I said, there were a number of countries that were on the list in 2007 that are not on the list now. But then there's other countries that are pretty consistent, you know, and they've been on the list for years.
Yeah, Representative Hornsey, I do think some countries were removed off of the blacklist, if you will.
Correct.
But states like in your bill would still say these are tax havens.
Correct.
And develop
correct,
their
Mr.
own list, basically, yep. of tax havens.
Yeah. So they come Chair, and go.
Yeah, yeah. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like my good friend Chair Hornstein to consider a friendly amendment to reword the language, say, current list of tax havens according to the OECD. Because, Mr. Chair and members, in May of 2009, the Committee on Fiscal Affairs decided to remove all three remaining jurisdictions, Andorra, Principality of Liechtenstein, and the Principality of Monaco, from the list of uncooperative tax havens in the light of their commitments and on and on. You've got the document that I passed right out. So I think it would be a reasonable amendment to say, you know, Chair Hornstein has said the OECD is kind of the what we go by. I think we should go with the countries that the OECD has on their list as tax havens and leave it at that, because we are, you know, we're getting it. This probably needs to be re-referred to the International Affairs Committee because we're dealing in international affairs here, and I think that we've got a whole bunch of countries here that aren't even on the list that we're going to consider passing a bill. Well, I don't think we really are, but we're going to be considering passing a bill putting countries on a list for tax havens that are not tax havens. So if Chair Hornstein would consider a friendly amendment that we have a current list updated every 2 years for tax havens, and then the bill would apply to those tax havens as according to the OECD.
So Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I believe that given what happened at the federal level with the deemed repatriation, perhaps there is perhaps Representative Davids, if this bill is being laid over, I understand, correct?
That's correct.
So I would suggest that we work together to come up with perhaps an accurate list, and maybe the list of companies that countries that were identified in the Federal Tax Act, which, you know, is very recent. That's just within the last 18 months or so. The countries that were identified there as tax havens, where we're getting the deemed repatriation from, you know, may be a good compromise in terms of how to identify the proper countries.
Well, Representative Hornstein, the European Union has a list also. In fact, I'm Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, I just Googled real quick, and there's a report by the European Union that lists a whole bunch of different countries that are on this list already as well as transgressors for tax havens. And also the European Union cites the word of the day around here is transparency. This is good tax transparency to have this list. And so I guess I would agree with this bill.
Representative Carlson.
I was just going to mention I happened to watch 60 Minutes last Sunday, and the focus, about 25% of their program was on Monaco and what a tax haven it is. That was the main thrust of the story, if anybody who happened to watch it. The wealth that goes into Monaco, and some of the scenes and the cost of housing and so on that's there because it's a tax haven
It's like 1 square mile, I think, is what they said on the program, is what the municipality is. Totally independent and has been for several hundred years, but it's been a tax haven for generations, maybe hundreds of years. But the yachts and the huge apartments that are there for millions and millions of dollars per apartment, but people gravitate there for the tax advantages.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Marquardt. And to bring up the European Union in this discussion is a bit odd. Last I looked, we were not members of the European Union. We, as Chair Hornstein has said, the gold standard is the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, and there are no tax havens left. You know, not even Great Britain is going to be in the European Union for, well, maybe they will be. Hard to say, but why would we bring the European Union in the discussion when we are not members of the European Union? It doesn't affect us. The gold standard is the OECD, and there's no one on the list. This is just bizarre. I mean, Chair Hornstein has been so, like I said, has been so tremendously successful. He has just scared these countries into submission, and they are now being transparent and doing what they should have been doing the whole time. So I thank Chair Hornstein for his past bills that got us to this point where we have, according to the OECD, we have no tax havens. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like clarification maybe from the Department of Revenue about what a difference in commitment is versus actually implementing that commitment.
Yeah, Representative Schultz, I don't know. I mean, this isn't with the Department of Revenue. It's the OECD, so I don't know if they'd be able to determine that necessarily. But in the bill here, Representative Hornstein does not refer to the OECD.
No, that's it.
I mean, you've mentioned that, but in the bill wording, there's no reference to that. It's just the list of tax havens. Is that correct?
Correct. And again, I think, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Schultz raises a good issue, a commitment versus, you know, actual transparency being met is different. And Representative Carlson is absolutely correct. I mean, to state that there are no tax havens in the world, is just I just don't think that reflects reality, and if we need to be looking at an updated list or a different list, I'm certainly open to that, but you know, perhaps it could be the list that our own United States Department of Treasury, you know, has identified related to the tax bill from 2 years ago, because we are getting deemed repatriation. We are getting money repatriated from various tax havens. And that's the goal, Mr. Chair. That is the goal. All conversation aside, our goal is to make sure that money that is being hidden by Minnesota corporations overseas comes back to Minnesota, where we can put that revenue to work for our schools, for our health care system, for public safety, for higher education, everything we fund in the general fund. That money shouldn't be sitting somewhere in the South Pacific or the Caribbean.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Chair Hornstein, who compiled the list that you have in the bill?
Representative Hornstein.
I believe that you know, this is a list that has been, again, with some additions and deletions over the years, was compiled by House Research. And I think they're the gold standard, I think, in many ways, in terms of identifying tax havens.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Chair Hornstein, where did House Research get their information?
Well, my understanding, again,
Representative Hornstein.
We could talk to them, but in the past, Mr. Michael has looked at the, I believe, the OECD list, but I could be mistaken, but I know in the past he's looked at that list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chair Hornstein is from the OECD and the Internal Revenue Service. And for the record, I didn't hear anyone say that there are no tax havens in the world. I have found a few that are not on this list, but I'm not aware. We never said there are no tax havens in the world. Obviously, there are. It's just that this list that doesn't exist anymore Well, it's just interesting. It's not, well, whatever. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was curious as to see, you know, where the accuracy is. And I think I've heard discussions about, well, the OECD is the one that we should go to. So I pulled up their Automatic Exchange of Information Implementation Report for 2018, which is just last year. And in it, it says here, all jurisdictions asked to commit to the Global Forum's AEOI standard have now done so, except the United States. And so it appears that this OECD that is really looking for the transparency of the information, not whether or not they're tax havens. And so my question is, maybe we're looking for the wrong values in the wrong forum in order to determine who's tax havens and whether or not we ought to be going after them. And so I'm still confused as to what the bill does and where the value is and whether or not it works. I understand that in law you can create any list you want and just make implications that there are tax havens, whether they are or not, and that will impact, of course, tax policy, and it will impact dollars coming in because you're now treating them differently than others. But to say that there's a report out there that said these are uncooperative and tax havens is probably incorrect. And so I think just going on to their website, that this, at least the information here says that it's referring to, apparently doesn't exist anymore, or at least everything has been corrected. So maybe we're just dealing with outdated information as well, Mr. Chair. So thank you.
Representative Fabian.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
We do have a couple testifiers, and we can come back on this too. So Ms. Larson, I think I have first on the list. Please state welcome and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jill Larson with Minnesota Business Partnership. We do have some concerns about this bill, as you've heard in the past. One of them is that it seems to arbitrarily impose additional Minnesota taxes on businesses simply based on where they choose to incorporate affiliated companies or where they choose to do business. As has been mentioned, there is only one other state in the country that has this type of a blacklist approach, and that is Montana. The bill also imposes mandatory worldwide unitary combined reporting by taxing income that hasn't been earned in Minnesota or in the U.S. Several years ago, many years ago, when other states tried to impose worldwide reporting, it created very strong objections to our foreign trading partners, and the solution was the Water's Edge election, which is something that Minnesota currently has. Unfortunately, this proposal would force Minnesota taxpayers to include income earned outside the U.S., and there would be no Water's Edge election. As has been discussed by the committee, this list of tax havens that was originally drafted by the OECD many years ago no longer exists. My understanding from my research is that the OECD no longer maintains a list of tax haven countries. And the U.S. Department of Treasury, a few years ago under the former administration, opposes listing countries as tax havens or blacklisting specific countries. I quote from a Department of Treasury letter, some excerpts, there is no agreed upon definition of tax haven or list of jurisdictions that should be considered tax havens, because any such list is likely to be regarded as a blacklist and may be used as the basis for negative measures. Such a list may inappropriately negatively affect our economic and other relations with listed countries. So as Minnesota is trying, the end of quote, as Minnesota is trying to improve exports and trade and increase foreign direct investment in our state, this proposal will likely be opposed by and could even produce retaliatory action by our trading partners. As Representative Hornstein's mentioned, we have received letters from other consulates in past years expressing deep concerns about this proposal. And this also has some constitutional concerns. Congress has the exclusive right to regulate commerce with foreign countries, and to the extent that states impact the federal government's ability to speak with one voice in foreign affairs, there is a possible violation of the Foreign Commerce Clause. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the testifier. So you mentioned that Montana has passed this legislation, similar legislation. Have they experienced retaliation by other countries in terms of trade?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that they have received letters from the consulates. I have seen some articles and documents from Montana where there's been discussions in the past about repealing that bill. They have received letters from different consulates. There's been discussion about taking countries off, putting countries on. So I think that they have seen something similar. You know, Montana is not probably as much of a global commerce state as Minnesota is.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But do you have any information on whether the trade that they do has it been harmed or jeopardized because they passed legislation? So have other countries retaliated against the state of Montana?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can do some more checking for you. I haven't seen exact retaliation. Like I said, they have sent letters of concern and I don't know the exact impact on Montana's economy, but as I said, I think their economy is less focused in terms of the number of Fortune 500 companies that are there as opposed to Minnesota.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of in that same vein on the Montana law, because you cite possible constitutional issues, have there been any constitutional challenges to Montana's law? And if so, have those been sustained in the courts?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll have to check on that. Their law has been in effect for a while. It's changed a bit over the years. There's been changes in added countries and taken countries off, so I can check for you.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But it seems that you were citing kind of like that the idea of maintaining a list had constitutional issues. So just to say, if the law has stood since 2004 when it was implemented, I just don't see how that is a valid argument against implementing something like this. And I think it's interesting that we're kind of having a lot of discussions about the specific list or the, you know, kind of what the who are going to rely on to constitute this list, which is actually like outlined really clearly in the legislation. But it's just to say that this is a practice that is happening. This is a way that the largest, most powerful corporations with the richest CEOs, the most enriched shareholders in the world are using, you know, kind of beneficial tax arrangements in other countries to not pay their fair share of taxes in the country where they're doing business, where the public invests in education for their workers, in roads for them to move their goods around. And so this is just an issue of basic fairness, and I just don't want us to lose sight of the fact that this is a practice that is happening. To Chair Hornstein's point, right, this is a practice that's happening, and it was acknowledged in the TCJA, which is why there's deemed repatriation and they changed the policy on guilty. So, you know, we can argue about, like, where's the list coming from, what's the right composition of the list, but the point remains that this is an issue, it's something that's happening, and it is directly related to the issues that we're facing as a state in terms of having to make choices about whether we're going to, you know, fix our crumbling infrastructure or fix our special ed cross subsidy. That's the implication of this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Davids?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things here. First of all, some years ago we did hear this bill in tax committee. But what we're doing here is we're forming a blacklist, just so we know. This bill is calling them tax havens when the OECD and the IRS are not. I believe that's just a bit bizarre. What I would like to do on this forming of this blacklist, I'd like to hear from the Department of Revenue at some point, Mr. Chairman. I want to know if they support this bill.
We can certainly call them up towards the end here. So. Any other? All right. So, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I believe Ms. Larson really covered the testimony quite well, so we agree with her comments. Just want to make sure, go on the record, that the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce does oppose this legislation as well. We do believe, based on the discussion today, you can see this is really a very complicated area, kind of a lack, I believe, the expertise within the state to determine what countries are tax havens or not. There's also a letter that was distributed to you from CAS, the Council of State Taxation, that does mention as well that Oregon just repealed their tax haven law. And I think they point out, and I think that's very instructive as well, which is California has gone down this path, looked at this legislation and similar approach, and decided not to impose tax haven legislation. So you're seeing other, I would say, higher tax states, such as California, New York, others who have a very large corporate presence who have decided not to go down this path, and we would urge you as well not to include it in the final omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Cadoon? Before I call the Department of Revenue down, is there anyone else here in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1849 as amended? Seeing none. Ms. Bears? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. At this, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Revenue. At this time, we're not prepared to take a policy stance on the issue, but we can follow up and have further discussions with the author about some language that we could include if it moves forward.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed in Governor Wallace's budget proposal that he doesn't support forming a blacklist on these, our friends and neighbors in these various countries here. But I do remember, Chair Hornstein, you're exactly right. When we heard your bill, I got letters, and they're really cool. Return addresses are like gold or silver. they're really cool, from Liechtenstein. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And we got quite a few of those, actually, and I saved them all. Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative. Anything further for Ms. Bears? Thank you, Ms. Bears. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And earlier we heard discussions about all these rich companies with the richest CEOs. Do we have a list of those? Because I'd like to see what those are. And my question for further discussion, so then if you define it this way, that Minnesota isn't getting our fair share of taxes because of tax haven countries, then we probably have tax haven states in the United States here too, where the corporations are based in another state and pay taxes that way. And is that where we're going next if this continues going on? So, I mean, I just think there are so many problems with us trying to develop policy, especially when it goes international policy in regards to our own taxing. The thing that we ought to consider is what is the rationale for people going to countries and states like that? It's because we have kind of pushed them out with our policy issues in regards to taxes. And rather than always pointing to others and saying, hey, what are you doing? Sometimes we need to look back to what our policies are ourselves and what the cause is. So I just think this is time for a pause and say, okay, it's a good idea to always look at everything, but this probably isn't its day. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members, I appreciate the discussion. And whether or not it's this bill with tax havens, there is really a big concern with the shifting of corporate profits from the United States to low or no tax countries. There really is. And in fact, in 2014, companies had to report to the IRS where they had their foreign earnings. And the number one country was Bermuda. They had $96 billion of profits there, and yet the entire GDP, that's the total output of goods and services in Bermuda, was $6 billion. So there was 16 times more profits in Bermuda than they had gross domestic product. And in the Cayman Islands, it was $40 billion of profits, the $3 billions of gross domestic product, which realistically is impossible to actually have more earnings than GDP in a nation. And there was actually five countries that were that way. So, I mean, this is a problem. Whether or not it's the tax havens or whether or not it's some other way, how big is the problem? The Congressional Budget Office in April of 2018, when they evaluated the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, said that because of this profit shifting that should probably come from the U.S. but is being shifted to other low-tax or no-tax countries, we're losing, the federal government's losing about $300 billion of business income a year, which equates to about $100 billion in revenue, they're estimating. And so how does that happen? It's about two different ways in which that happens, according to the CBO. And one is what these multinational corporations will do. And by the way, this is all legal. This is all legal. But what they will do is they will transfer their debt into, back to the U.S., a higher tax nation. Because with the debt comes the interest, which you then can deduct in a higher tax versus a low tax. And the other thing that they do is they transfer their intangible or intellectual properties, which could be copyrights, trademarks, patents, drug formulas, and they transfer those from higher tax nations to lower tax nations, therefore putting lower income in high tax areas and more income in low tax areas. And so the IRS has a problem really tracking this because this intangible property has no physical or material existence, not like property or a piece of equipment. So it's easy for companies to move that around, and that's kind of caused, according to the CBO, that's probably the biggest reason for that $300 billion that is lost. So Ms. Larson had mentioned that back in the 80s, there was 12 states that went to what was called a mandated worldwide combined reporting system, where you basically taxed everything that a company did around the world minus whatever they paid in taxes that country, so you weren't double taxation. And as Ms. Larson said, the multinational corporations and foreign governments went to Congress in the 80s and said, hey, we got to stop this practice. And that practice had been backed up with two Supreme Court cases that said it was constitutional. So President Reagan, in 1984, set up a task force. And the task force was run by his Treasury Secretary, Donald Regan, who said, okay, we're going to pressure these states to stop doing this worldwide practice. But this task force said, we're going to help states recoup some of this lost tax base. We're going to help them do that. Well, that was 1984. So they basically told the states, don't do this. And the federal government said, we will help you, and we will try to reduce this tax base erosion. That never occurred. In fact, they actually added to it when they did a repatriation holiday in 2004, where you brought back and about $300 billion of profits came back one time at a 5.25% rate instead of the then 35% rate. So that was the holiday part. Was not all that successful, but instead of actually giving local or states tools to combat this, they actually exasperated it by doing things that actually led that. So that leads us to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which they thought the federal government, this was a major concern, was this tax base erosion and this shifting of profits. So moving the tax rate, corporate tax rate, from 35% to 21%, they thought would lessen the incentives to go to lower tax because you're lowering the tax and more comparable. But then the federal government did something just opposite of that. They moved from basically a worldwide system to a territorial system, which says now we no longer will tax any foreign income. And as Representative Hornstein said, with the deemed repatriation, what they did on a one-time basis, only one time, they said, okay, whether or not you bring the profits back or not, we're going to tax it. We're going to deem it like you brought it back. And so there's about $2.7 trillion of profits that have been accumulated since 1986. And the CBO, or the Committee on Joint Taxation, estimates there's going to be about $338 billion of revenue brought back. But that's only one time. And once that gets brought back and taxed one time, until eternity, it will never be taxed again. And so there is one tool that the federal government gave us, and I think Representative Gomez, you mentioned that, was the Global Intangible Low Tax Income, or the GILTI. And so that is the one tool after 35 years that they've given the states. I know we're not talking GILTI today, but we're going to probably be talking about it later. It was in the governor's bill, is that this is one way for the states to try to recoup some of this lost revenue over all these years. And the fact of the matter is that you've got businesses that compete with these corporations that don't have the wherewithal to be able to shift profits. So they're literally paying more here in the United in Minnesota because we're allowing other businesses to shift taxes on and profits to Bermuda. And so, you know, our working families and our seniors and our farmers are paying more because we're allowing countries to shift profits to the Grand Cayman Islands. And so is it legal? Yes. We have good corporate partners here in Minnesota. But I don't think it's right and I don't think it's fair. You know, when we're struggling to finance education, which provides a very good workforce for our companies, we're struggling to do that, we should be recouping some of these dollars that have been lost. And I'm going to kind of calculate, if it's $300 billion a year lost revenue in the U.S. at a 2% apportionment, that's maybe $6 billion of income that Minnesota has not been receiving every year. And if you apportion that down and so forth, I don't know what that equates to, but it could literally be hundreds, if not billions, of dollars over the last 35 years. So, you know, to kind of do this, and I don't know if the tax haven's the right way, and I know it's, I think it's the first day of spring, Representative Hornstein, and with the right comes the tax havens. But when you do look at this, the states don't have a lot of these tools, and even the federal government realized that this is a problem, that dollars that should be legitimately, really, in realistic terms, should be taxed in the U.S. are kind of artificially, in a legal way, being transferred to these low tax. And it's a lot of this intellectual properties that are tough to keep track of. And so I do think there are some methods that we should do. And I think it's incumbent upon us, if we want a fair system, to other businesses that compete that don't have the wherewithal. They're paying kind of the full freight. And actually, like I said, we've got good corporate partners in this state. And I know that they want to do what's fair also. And, you know, the federal government tried to get at this, and this GILTI is not a perfect system. The factors they use are kind of arbitrary. But there are ways in which the states can do that to make that work. So whether or not it's the tax havens or not, I do think this is a huge issue. And I do think it's incumbent upon Minnesota after 35 years to try to look at some tools to recoup that, to create a fair tax system for everyone, other businesses and our families and our working families and senior citizens, farmers, and so forth. So, Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that you really summarized the issue before us, and I think that Representative Gomez framed it very well as well. So maybe there's some discomfort with lists. I understand that. But there is a fundamental question of fairness that's before us. This is a problem. This is an issue. It was identified in the TCJA. I appreciate Representative Davids last year. We worked together to at least get some of that deemed repatriation back. And you know, it was $50 million. I think there's more that we could get. And so the question really before us as legislators is, what is the state-level response? What is the state tools that we have as a state to also start collecting this money? Because it should not be sitting there in these countries. And I think there's a fundamental tax and public policy issue before us. And so I hope that in this session, in the next few weeks, whether it's this bill or some other mechanism, we can figure out how to get more revenue that is rightly ours, that should be working for the people of Minnesota and not sitting in some bank overseas. That's the fundamental question. And I hope that together we can figure out the proper way to address this issue in state policy. And that's really what I'm trying to get at. And I think that was what you were trying to get at as well, Mr. Chair, because there is potentially lots of revenue that we could be collecting that we currently are not.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think your comments were very appropriate. Well, obviously you're the chairman, so of course they're appropriate. But tax policy affects behavior. It affects behavior. So we've found out today that we've already known is that money does flow to lower taxed areas. I'm not sure, you know, you said number one, Mr. Chairman, is Bermuda. Ireland has to be up there a ways too. I think they're at 11%. I know billions of dollars from the United States go into Ireland, so they're taxed at 11%. I would request to meet with Ms. Templin sometime today, because I want to know how you have a revenue note that has all this money coming in when there's no one on the list to get it from. That's something. And just so we know, just so we're clear, Bermuda is the number one area where people are putting their money. And I just want you to know that the Better Business Bureau of Bermuda rated the Bermuda Bankers Association with a 5-star rating.
Chair Davids, I don't know if that's actually where most of the taxes go. That was on this list of, they had certain taxes where it was kind of out of whack with GDP versus, I think I know in Germany and France, the percent of the GDP that are profits there by U.S. companies is only like 0.5%. So it might be more, but they're talking about kind of the percent of the total GDPs. Did we have
right here,
Representative Swazinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I just want to remind, you know, it was brought up that, you know, the businesses that are actually potentially taking advantage of this opportunity are larger businesses, ones that maybe have a little bit more wherewithal, a few more staff that can, you know, help manage their assets in a way that is beneficial to their stockholders, their customers, and the rest. And, you know, we've had the tax incident studies that, you know, we said it's an issue of fairness. It's an issue of what's right. We've heard that over, we want to be able to fund our schools. But if you look at the data when it comes to the tax incident studies, that over and over again, we say, well, we want to go after business. Businesses are, they simply collect taxes for government. So a corporation will simply pass the cost of the taxes on to their customers because that's what they do. 90% or 95% of taxes that are on business gets passed to the consumer. It's the tax incident study. It says there might be a caveat that says, well, Minnesotans maybe only pay 45% of that, but the other 45% of that gets passed to other customers around the state and other states. So this idea that they need to pay their fair share is simply, I mean, in some way or another, I would make the argument in big that a tax on a corporation is a regressive tax. No different than a gas tax, no different than a cigarette tax, no different than any other tax, a tax on clothes, because you could be taxing a corporation that makes clothing that has profit. Well, who's paying for that tax? The mom, the dad, the single mother, the folks that are trying to put shoes on their kids' feet. They're the ones paying the tax. It's the customer because they've passed it along. So,
thank you. Any other comments on Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was happy to hear your comments about the business partners that we have here in the state of Minnesota, because for too long, a lot of those businesses have been demonized by folks who accuse them of not, you know, being good neighbors and not paying their fair share and so forth. And I'm going to stand up for the business community, particularly in the district that I represent. I've got a couple of family-owned businesses up there that employ 6,000 people. And the good that they do in the towns that they are based in and the counties that they're in is almost immeasurable. Can you imagine a family spending $26 million to build a senior living center? That's what they did in War Road. A family did that, that owns a company. A company that was started by some people that had a vision. And they employ lots of people, and they've been through some tough times during the housing market, and people were working 30 hours a week. Nobody got laid off. Everybody pitched in, rolled up their sleeves together. And I'm just really, really proud of what the businesses do in Roseau in terms of helping out at the high school with all kinds of robotics and technology and welding and trades type of things that they do in our schools. And the same thing happens in Thief River Falls. These companies are awesome. And they employ lots of people, and the people really like the managers that they're working for. I just am really disheartened when I hear the comments about these evil corporations. I just, it doesn't ring in my neighborhood. It does not. And, you know, Representative Hornstein, you talked about a fundamental question. And there are several fundamental questions. I'm interested in what conversations have you had with CEOs or the corporations who are doing these things that you're saying that they're doing, to get some insight from them to find out what can we do here in Minnesota with regards to tax policy that will get them to want to bring their money back here.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. I just am aware of the fact that, you know, I look at the data and I see that there is money that is, you know, that certain Minnesota companies, and we don't, and the Department of Revenue knows who those companies are. We don't. There's the issue, and I don't know if it's a policy or a law, but we know there are some companies that are engaging in this practice, and I wish I knew who they were, because then I could have that conversation. But I don't know who they are. It's not every company. It's likely not a family-owned business. I think it's some of the largest companies in the state. And as someone mentioned, they have the accountants and the expertise to figure out how to do this. But if I knew who those companies were, I would love to have that conversation, because the conversation I would have is, you need to bring this money home. And that's what happened in that's what happened at the federal level. On a bipartisan basis, the TCJA recognized this problem, and as Chair Marquardt said, hundreds of billions of dollars are coming home. And we need some money to come back to Minnesota. That's the conversation I would have.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, why is that money now coming back? Because the government says you will bring that money back?
Yeah, Representative Hornstein.
My understanding is that is a federal law that was passed on a bipartisan basis and signed by the president in late 2017.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But the reason that it got done and it was able to get passed, and I don't know that there were very many, if any, Democrat votes on it, was because, as I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chair, the tax rate on those dollars was lowered, and that was an encouragement to bring them back. So we got a bite out of the apple, and we didn't choke to death on the entire apple. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I wish that wasn't a provision in the bill, but it was. I know that there was opposition to that provision. There was opposition. People wanted the status quo. But I think it was so egregious. I think there was a recognition that this was so egregious and that there was so much money being hidden overseas that something had to be done.
Representative Fabian.
There were other reasons, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, why Democrats didn't vote for it. I think that provision might have been one that could have been more bipartisan.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hornstein, you know that you and I have a very, very good relationship, both personally and professionally. And I'm being very serious when I say you don't know who the companies are. Listen, in my hometown, okay, I have this little company that started in 1954 by three people who had a vision. Okay, today that company is a Fortune 500 company that started in Roseau, Minnesota. My point is that I know you well enough to know that if you wanted to sit down with these people, the business leaders who are involved in our business community, that they would welcome an opportunity to come to your office and speak generically about this situation. And it doesn't, no disrespect to the people who are here testifying on their behalf, but I know that they would come to your office. So send out an invitation to them and talk to them.
So, and Representative Fabian, I appreciate your comments, and hopefully you didn't misconstrue mine. As I said, we've got good corporate partners, and federal government and the president and both parties have said this is a concern, and the fact that this profit shifting is causing lost revenue, and it's totally legal, but it's a loophole. I mean, there are things happening, and those dollars, I knew I shouldn't have used that term. I'll get Chair David's going.
I was so careful not to, Mr. Chair.
But, that we could try to close. But the fact of the matter is a lot of these lost revenues hurt the competitiveness of some of these other businesses, and some of these lost revenues would be used for funding that would help these corporations to train workers, to provide good roads, to move goods to market, to help fund broadband, which is a real economic driver. So it's kind of the balance on all of this. And just, you know, any tax code is trying to get as fair as you can possibly get, where people pay no more, no less than what they should. So, I just think there's some tools now that the federal government, in looking at this whole issue, has provided to the states that are possible tools we can use. But, anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Fabian.
And I told you at the very beginning, I really appreciated your comments because you were being complimentary to our business community, and I appreciate that. I really do.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I may.
You may.
Representative Hornstein, when you schedule that meeting with these leaders of these Fortune 500 companies, I would be more than happy to sit in that room with you.
Representative Hornstein.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, you know, I've had great conversations with the business community about transportation issues over the years, including this year. We don't always disagree. We tend to disagree. We don't always agree on issues around transportation. But there are many points of agreement, maybe not the revenue source that I'm interested in using to fund transportation. But there is a lot of agreement around that issue with the business community. And, I think that some conversations around tax policy, which I tend to not have with them, it's mostly around transportation, would be beneficial. But, you know, my point, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, is that for whatever reason, and demands more investigation by us as a legislative body, that there is not a lot of transparency in terms of who those companies are. And I think it's a small number, but we know that this, you know, my understanding is that this does happen, and if I knew who those were, I would love to have that conversation. And it may not be the ones in your district.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I really appreciate, I think most people want to have an intellectual and authentic conversation really appreciate your words, Chairman of our corporations and our business partners, and Chair Hornstein's. They were very careful in the words they choose. And I hear too often, I think we hear too often, that they say they're not paying their fair share. I think that's so unauthentic and unfair and not even an intelligent statement unless you truly know their tax returns. I know several businesses in Wright County, mean big corporations, that pay their fair share. Some of them are dear friends, so I know what they pay. I know what they pay in their tens of thousands of square feet footage manufacturing buildings that pay for property tax, that pay for roads and bridges and our education and the health care. So I've always rejected, and it's insulting when I hear people say, paying their fair share. Unless someone really knows what they pay, it's such an intelligent or unintelligent comment. So I appreciate your comments, Chairman, the kindness that you showed and the fairness to our corporations and business partners and Chair Hornstein's as well, not to throw out such a stupid statement of saying they don't pay their fair share. I think we should reject that and really have a more honest and authentic conversation and not say such
things. Mr. Chair, point of order, I don't think it's appropriate to state that the comments of another member on this committee were unintelligent.
I don't know if that comment was made.
No, I didn't say that, Mr. Chair.
Oh. So, yeah, it was. All right. Very
Mr. Chair, I never pointed out anyone in particular. I hear that word often. We hear that word often. So I was saying it's not a fair, intelligent statement unless one really truly knows what another individual corporation pays. So if someone was insulted by that, my dearest apologies. It was not my intention.
Okay. I think we need to make sure we don't cast aspersions on the quality of comments and so forth. But I did hear.
Chairman, section of Mason, section 1.4, paragraph 3, says that you cannot attack the person, but you may, in the strongest terms, condemn the issue. So that's Mason. So I didn't see where Representative McDonald was out of order in any way. He did not attack a person. He attacked a statement in the strongest terms. And that wasn't even that strong. We are in order concerning Masons.
Very good. And I know there's an objection has been raised, and I think rather than ruling one way or the other, I just would like to.
Well, Mr. Chair.
state the members, just watch what they say. They're Representative Becker.
In 2 Masons 124, you know, then it's fine to say that that you disagree with the language, and it's fine to say that you think it's that the language of the bill is unfair. We're supposed to speak to the bill. But to state that the comments of a member themselves, you know, when somebody, you know, that's just stupid or that's just intelligent is not appropriate. And I don't.
Actually, it is.
We speak to the bill, not to members.
Representative Becker-Finn, thank you for bringing that up and reminding members. So any further comments? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Representative Hornstein for bringing this bill forward and having us have such an engaging conversation early in the morning. And just as a reminder, thank you, Mr. Chair, for stating that civility should rule in this discussion. Otherwise, it's going to be really long until the end of session. And I would just ask members to choose their words wisely as well. And the comment was obviously directed at not just the intent, but ooh. Not the language of the bill, but a comment about a comment that was made. So we can disagree on that, and I'm sure we'll disagree on a lot of other things, but I would just kind of really beg that we'd have civility rule. And we always talk here in taxes about how taxes can predict or push or move the way people interact with things and with the law, with money and moving things around. And we all know that sometimes we have to do carrots out there to get people to actually do the right thing. That's what happens. But I want to make sure that we understand that what we're trying to do here with this bill and other bills we're talking about is that we're trying to level the playing field for the businesses in your district, Representative Fabian. Because as I heard from other people, even on your side, they don't have the lawyers and the accountants to shift money all over the world, but they're trying to compete in a global society, especially with the ability to sell their goods and services on the internet and globally. So we want to make sure that it's a level playing field for them and that folks that maybe aren't doing, you know, using the tax code to ship money all over the world and make it so they don't have to pay all the taxes on it is truly unfair to our small businesses and our businesses on Main Street. So I know you like to think that we think corporations are evil. That is not the thing. We care just as much as you do about our communities and our business owners and our Main Streets. So just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
How did you know, Mr. Chair?
Your name was used.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
You know, I appreciate the conversation here that we've had today as well. In terms of leveling the playing field for the businesses in my community, whether they're the small Main Street Hardware or that Fortune 500 company that I can see from the back window of my house, I have a lot of ideas for leveling the playing field. And we're competing, as you said, in an international global market. And when I look at the amount of movement out of the state of Minnesota as a result of our tax and regulatory climate, I ask people, not rhetorically, but, well, somewhat rhetorically, why is it that when a company that's in the district that I represent has the good fortune to grow and expand and then want to increase and get even bigger, why do they choose to go to Grafton, North Dakota, and Fargo, North Dakota, for that expansion, and not Crookston and Moorhead? And if you sit down and have that conversation with those people, they'll tell you why. It's because of tax and regulatory climate. And some people would say, well, it has to do with workforce. Chair Marquardt, you live in the Fargo-Moorhead area. What's the difference between the workforce that's available in Moorhead versus the workforce that's available in Fargo? And that's a rhetorical question, obviously. But I do appreciate the conversation, and I'm looking for ways to level the playing field, and I'm happy to work with Representative Joachim or Representative Hornstein or anyone. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Slezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just kind of piggyback. We talked about this, the fair share portion, and how this is potentially affecting our local businesses. By nature, you know, your own words, Mr. Chair, was talking about this is oftentimes intellectual property that is being shifted into some of these havens, essentially. And so what is that? It's patents, it's ideas, it's, by its own words, not a publicly, you know, discussed thing. So these are things or ideas that have been developed and shared and by its own nature owned by maybe one business. So there's not multiple businesses, multiple corporations, not Main Street businesses that own a patent. It's a single business. And to say that because that patent is being put into a tax haven by itself is somehow, you know, shortchanging a local business is not necessarily true, because a vast majority of intellectual property is property that is owned by a single entity because of its uniqueness, because of the patent surrounding it, the protection of it. You know, we really want to get after jobs and local jobs from an international standpoint, because this is an international issue that we're talking about. You know, we should be looking at, and I believe the president on a large extent is trying to make a difference, is looking at what China and Southeast Asia is doing to a lot of our patents, and they're robbing us blind. You know, they're taking our intellectual property, they're taking it from businesses. And part of that's our own fault from a manufacturing standpoint, is because we are, as Representative Fabian mentioned, we are unfriendly. So we have businesses that, in order to compete on an international scale, have to look at third world countries or developing countries to find a market so that they can produce a product at a product and a cost that we can compete in on an international level. And, you know, we need to be looking seriously from an American standpoint and a Minnesota standpoint to say, whether it be shrimp in southwest Minnesota that moves to South Dakota, there are certain jobs that potentially can always be here, mining, when you're looking at agriculture, when you're looking at things that are of the ground. But when it comes to thoughts of the ideas and the marketability of patents and the things from an intellectual standpoint, those are things that truly we can capture by creating a fertile ground to do it. And we do it from an educational standpoint. We have a lot of development. One of the bills we heard was an angel investor tax credit. And those are the ways that we can help develop those relationships, making sure that those things stay here, start here, and maybe thrive here. But it takes all three things to do it. We also have to have fertile ground in which to grow. We can create a seed, we can create an idea, but we also want to have a nice place for it to grow. And I believe tax policy is one of those areas that fundamentally can make a difference, but then also on a regulatory basis that, you know, if that business is going to go to the next level, this is going to be the next Fortune 500 company, that it can actually do it here and not have so many encumbrances to do it. So there we go.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to go back to, you know, kind of what we're talking about here. And I think every governor that I'm aware of has made at least one, if not more than one, trip overseas to various countries trying to develop investments in Minnesota, trade in Minnesota, and try to get companies to really come and invest in our state here as well. And I'm sure that the companies there will look at our tax structure and all the information, find out how they could be competitive in this market, understanding the property tax values, et cetera, and make those decisions about what's there. And part of that would be how they're going to deal with profits and other things that are there. And so I think that's one area for us to consider. This is not just a easy solution where one size fits all. Going beyond that, we may look at this as a windfall to the state, the dollars going to come in. But the reality is that every business that I know of, when their expenses go up, so do their costs and so do their prices that they charge. So eventually all of this windfall that we see is going to come upon consumers, taxpayers in one form or another. So where I say it's very complicated, it is. It's kind of like a house of cards, and we have to be careful how much we wiggle a leg of that, because it can come down on us. So I just ask us to work cautiously and make sure that we do the right thing when all the things are put together and we come together with us with a solution there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to draw the committee's attention to something that was handed out by the pages at the beginning of the hearing. And at the top, it says OFII. So it's the Organization for International Investment. And it was some of the similar concerns that the testifiers came forward to say from Minnesota Chamber and so on. But as I was looking through, the next page is a membership list. And I'm sitting here listening to the conversation and looking for Minnesota companies, and I found some. But one in particular that really stood out to me of the list of the Minnesota companies is one that does medical device. And why is that in particularly interesting to me? Well, it is because I happen to know that there are there's manufacturing facilities within my district that supply this particular company. And I visit there quite often. There's quite a few manufacturers in Minnesota. In my district, I actually have two of the five precision manufacturers that can tool to 1 to 2 micron tolerances, which is incredibly precise. So there's one just outside. There's actually one up near, not quite in Fabian's district, but Representative Fabian's district has, just outside, has one. But in any case, so they are highly skilled. They've been there for a very long time, and they started off very, very small, as Representative Fabian had described. So as I visit these precision manufacturers that supply this very large corporation, we have very frank conversations about taxation, about workforce, and they commonly remind me that 1 out of 6 jobs in Minnesota is directly related to manufacturing. 1 out of 6, that's a huge workforce here in Minnesota. So you're talking about a vast number of folks here in Minnesota. And, you know, again, the company that is opposed to this bill is on this list. They are an international company. Their suppliers are many, many, many. I have suppliers in my district that supply this particular company. So I would just point that out, that this is far-reaching. And if they're concerned about their competitiveness, which is another thing that I hear often from my manufacturers, that they are living on very thin margins, that they have to compete not just in Minnesota, but they have to compete nationally and globally to again, they are the precision manufacturers of Minnesota. There's only 5. And any change, any pressure, any we talked about sort of this tax atmosphere or environment here in Minnesota. It will directly determine what they're going to do with their business. And they have grown into a very successful business in my district and employ a lot of people. So I just think that we need to be mindful and actually, you know, read the documents that were sent to us or brought to us. And it's interesting to see the names on the list. But one in particular, like I said, is one that employs an awful lot of people, and the suppliers employ an awful lot of people in Minnesota. So I think we should be mindful of that and pay attention to their concerns.
Members, any other comments or questions? Representative Hornstein, any final comments?
Well, thank you. This is an exciting committee. I appreciate the conversation a lot. I always learn from hearings, and I would just stand by, you know, my contention that, you know, tax havens exist. There are Minnesota companies that are shifting money overseas. I do believe that it is important that we follow at least philosophically what has been done at the federal level. And if there's a way in Minnesota tax policy and Minnesota public policy to repatriate all or part of those funds, so they can work hard for the people of Minnesota, developing a first-class education system, making sure our people have health care, making sure that we have a strong infrastructure. Those are the things that ultimately help our state and help businesses, small and large, nonprofit, civic. We need infrastructure for education, health care, transportation, and a clean environment. That's what creates jobs, and that's what builds our economy. And that's what we do in our general fund here. So I hope that moving forward, Mr. Chair and members, we can find through research and looking at this issue a little more closely. We haven't had a good tax haven discussion for a few years. But I do feel that given the changes in the federal tax law, we need to see and really, really look closely at what we can do here in the state of Minnesota to repatriate this money so it works for all of us. So thank you very much for the conversation, and I look forward to working with you and members on both sides of the aisle to see if there's a way that we can move forward with this bill, perhaps in a changed form, but with its intention the same, to repatriate money back to the state of Minnesota that's in tax havens overseas. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hornstein, thank you for spending the time you did today with the committee. With that, Representative Carlson renews his motion to lay over House File 1849 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Hornstein, thank you so much. Members, thanks for the discussion. House File 2429, next up on the agenda. Representative Loeffler. And would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 2429 for consideration for inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, members. What this bill does is has Minnesota adopt a provision that has been a longstanding provision in federal IRS procedures and rules, and has been adopted by 20 other states ranging from Alabama to California. And what it does, it would create a authority for the Commissioner of Revenue to look at the economic substance of decisions made by corporations in order and businesses to make sure that there's a real business purpose for that decision and not just to seek to avoid taxes. And we want our businesses to be successful. We want them to be focused on improving their products, improving their services, improving their contributions to our community and our state, and to employing more people within our economy. But sometimes they can get distracted in the game of how do we avoid taxes and sometimes do things that really don't serve those broader purposes, but instead are just a way to economically avoid a tax within the state of Minnesota. And what this would do is you would allow the Department of Revenue to disallow a tax benefit, whether that's a credit or a deduction, if the company cannot establish that it was done for a reason other than it was done for an economic purpose to benefit that company, and that it was done in a way that the benefit to the company was more than just the value of the tax reduction, and so that there is a substantial economic purpose for that business making that action. And it's a policy that has been, as I said, longstanding federal policy. It has been adopted by 20 other states as a way to make sure that our companies focus on what we want them to do, focus on, which is being successful, improving their products and services, hiring people. And so this would simply allow us to conform to the federal government's tradition as well as that of many other states. And with that, I'd be glad to answer questions.
Very good. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, on page 4, I see that in its subdivision 5, so line 4.23, again, that's page 4, line 0.23, I see that there's rulemaking. Can you speak to the rulemaking, and is this bill going to be going to government operations where they deal with rulemaking?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill, the purpose of the rulemaking is to set out examples so that companies really understand the basis on which the Department of Revenue will be interpreting this, and so that it's, you know, fair notice to the companies about the intention and that they can plan accordingly. That there'll also be uniform procedures within the department in applying this, so that we understand that all companies are treated alike. Whether or not this needs to go to the Government Operations Committee is something I haven't yet discussed with that chair.
And Representative O'Neill, we do have the Department of Revenue on the list to testify, and so they may be able to answer that too. And so it would be all right. Could I call the testifiers forward? Okay. So Ms. Tape from the Department of Revenue, and if you could maybe address this rulemaking question in your comments. And then we have Ms. Larson, Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Melissa Tape, an attorney at the Department of Revenue. The department would like to share a few observations from our experience in administering our tax laws. Federally, Congress enacted its economic substance doctrine in 2010, although it had been developing for decades in federal law. Additionally, nearly half of the states with corporate income tax have an established economic substance rule or legislation. Other states successfully enforce their economic substance doctrine through case law, making legislation unnecessary. Minnesota is an outlier. The Minnesota Supreme Court ruled in 2010, the same year the federal law was codified, that economic substance is not available through Minnesota statutory or case law. In the Minnesota Supreme Court case, referred to as HMN Financial, there were over 100 factual findings detailing transactions that had no business purpose other than reducing tax liability. The underlying tax court opinion cited 13 other states that had been confronted with the same kinds of transactions, all of which had invalidated the tax result of those transactions based on economic substance laws. The bill would bring Minnesota's law in line with federal law and with the laws of other states. The bill parallels federal law, allowing Minnesota taxpayers the stability of looking to federal doctrine and federal case law for guidance. An established economic substance provision provides a fair and equitable administration of the Minnesota tax laws. With respect to the question on the rulemaking authority found in Subdivision 5, basically that rulemaking would require the commissioner to establish rules to carry out the economic substance doctrine, and the rules would need to include examples of both transactions that would not be challenged for violating an economic substance doctrine, as well as rules that would be challenged for violating an economic substance doctrine.
Very good. Representative Neal, did you have any more questions on that?
I don't believe that rulemaking isn't within the scope of the tax committee. I mean this is a completely new rulemaking authority that we're giving the department. I think this needs to be seen by government operations, where they have the expertise and the scope, and so that's my concern.
Very good, thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Tape? Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification, what's the motion on this bill?
It's for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill, but we will be laying this over ultimately, of course, for possible inclusion. But Representative Chair Davis,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had an experience yesterday. I don't like to repeat that often. It's going to before the HHS committee, and my bill was heard. And there's a provision about a Good Samaritan portion. Well, apparently that had to go to a judiciary. Mm-hmm. So realizing that the bill needed to travel someplace else, I won't say I gladly accepted, but I accepted my fate that I had to go now to judiciary of all things. And that was just over a little Good Samaritan provision. This is brand new rulemaking. This cannot, this has to go to GovOps.
So good points. Thank you, Chair David. So right now we're just going to, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Chair Davids, I promise to be gentle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Lesh, I am very sensitive, as you know.
So my plan would be to lay it over, and then we'll discuss this. And certainly what we are hearing here would be highly taken into consideration if this bill was to move forward. So, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, on the chance that the motion were to change or it needed to go to GovOps, you made that decision. What would then be required of this committee to move that bill to GovOps?
I believe we would move it to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair, and then, or would it just, since Governor, that's just a policy, so it could be sent straight there, since that's policy and not, Chair Carlson.
Necessarily have the bill before them, but we'll have an informational meeting. They can't take action on the bill, but they could hear the substance of it. That's something you need to talk to the chair of government on.
Okay.
But then you wouldn't necessarily have to do a referral.
I will commit to the committee that there will be discussions with the chairs, and like I said, I'm hearing what concerns of the committee members are. So. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would just encourage you then to also have conversations with our lead as well.
Very good. We've got a couple testifiers. Ms. Cadoon. Thank you very much, Ms. Tate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We are here to respectfully oppose this bill. This bill, we do believe, will create uncertainty over Minnesota tax laws, give tremendous discretion to Department of Revenue's auditors, and also imposes very high penalties for taxpayers and a very high standard of proof for taxpayers. We believe it is rightfully the role of the legislature as elected officials that have the responsibility and authority to make tax laws. The authority should not be delegated to DOR auditors. This law change would give, as I mentioned, DOR auditors broad discretion and the authority to disregard certain tax laws if the auditors decide that certain taxpayers following those tax laws should not be allowed to do so. For example, DOR could challenge the transaction when a taxpayer changes the tax status of its legal entity from an S-corp to C-corp or vice versa. A lot of those changes are done for tax purposes, and that could be disregarded under this bill. We believe the proper way to handle transactions if the DOR objects to what a taxpayer is doing is to bring forward legislation, and that's, you see that over and over again every year where they bring forward legislation to make changes. That allows for the public input, obviously, as well as the legislative approval. Another issue is creating the uncertainty regarding tax laws. It is important for taxpayers to know what the law is and how it is to be applied. And this will create the uncertainty of they won't know what tax laws they can do or cannot do. Plus, this also has a retroactivity date of December 31st, 2018, even prior to rulemaking, so taxpayers really would not have notice, as was mentioned, of what the tax laws are going to be enforced. For burden of proof, current law requires when the Department of Revenue gives an order, that order is deemed to be correct, and taxpayers already have the burden of proof to then change that to show that it's incorrect. This would require them to prove their case by clear and convincing evidence, very, very high standard that's almost impossible to overcome. The penalties imposed on this bill are an additional 40% penalty. Under current law already contains sufficient penalties between the 20% substantial understatement of liability penalty and a late payment penalty. So we don't believe we should be adding an additional penalty of 40% as well. With that, we would just urge you not to include in your final omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chair, thank you again. Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Given the time of the committee, I just want to say we also have concerns about this bill. Echo the comments made by Ms. Cadoon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Larson. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2429? Hearing none, any last? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, can you tell me what the rulemaking process is like at the Department of Revenue?
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, actually in the earlier discussion, I was going to say I hadn't had a chance to talk with the Department of Revenue about why rulemaking would be better versus guidances, which what would better serve our business community and understanding the approaches where you can give examples that are easier for a business person to interpret versus sometimes rules can be sort of a little obtuse. I will say, having worked with rules in another area of law, and so I think there's a legitimate discussion to be had about what is the best way to make sure that the law is clear and that businesses know the expectations and the tests that would be applied.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm curious about is at DOR, the ability of the public to weigh in on the rulemaking, to have public comment and testimony. Does that happen there?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Moffler.
Thank you. My understanding of the Administrative Procedures Act is that it's required of all rules, and that there needs to be public notice in the state register, that there's opportunities for input. And then even in the development of the rules, most state agencies engage the affected parties and in a discussion about how to approach this. And so I would expect that in this situation as well.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just with the questions and the answers here, I just really believe that this needs to go to GovOps.
Yeah, and duly noted, the rulemaking has been brought up as a real concern, and that will be duly noted. So any other comments? Representative O'Neill.
I know you want to consider where to, you know, if you should send this to government ops, but I would just really implore you to just send it there. Our time's running out, deadlines are happening, and I don't see why we couldn't just make a motion right now just to send it to the government operations where it really belongs. We just, it's just not in our scope here.
And we could possibly just remove that section.
Well, do we see an amendment to do that?
I mean, that, so it's being laid over. I guess if it moves further, we can bring this back up. That's what I would suggest. I mean, it's, we know it's a concern, and I just soon lay it over today, and we could do certain things with the bill if it moves forward that wouldn't require it to move to another committee. And I would guarantee you if that rulemaking would stay in, it will get moved to another committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, my concern is since it was in the bill, there must be a reason why it was in the bill. And isn't it a fundamental part of the bill? If you remove it, doesn't that make it problematic?
So, well, I think, you know, we can talk to back to the author and figure that out. What I'm saying is if the rulemaking stays in, we'll make sure that goes to another committee. But I'd like to lay it over today. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say, it seems to me that since the federal government has already got a definition and a procedure in dealing with it, it might be even more simpler just to apply the federal law to this instead of going to this type of level of involvement. But that's me, just food for thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think with the comments made, there's still a little work to be done on this. So, Representative Erickson, did you?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. If rulemaking is removed, then you're going to have to be very specific in your statutory language that replaces this because of the way this section of law reads. You know, so just that reminder that you can't rely on revenue just to provide guidance. You're going to have to put in statute if you remove the rulemaking because rulemaking will be very specific. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler, any closing comments on House File 24?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate the discussion, and we'll definitely continue the discussion with the Department of Revenue and others about the best way to move forward, whether it is to apply federal guidance and say we're just going to adopt that, which has been established, or whether we would use a guidance structure or some other structure. But I think the intent here is to make sure that our companies really do focus on what we want all businesses to focus on, which is better serving their clients, improving their products and services, and it creating more opportunities for people within their communities.
Very good. So with that, Representative Loeffler moves to lay over House File 2429 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report. Thank you very much. And there is one announcement. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Usually we do our sports announcements on Tuesday mornings, but I had to step out. I just had to give a shout-out to our Hopkins girls basketball team that just won the 4A championship this weekend, beating Stillwater 77-45 after a 32-0 season. So I had to give them brags.
Representative Swazinski, announcements.
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 But I'd like to also announce, so only five times in Minnesota history has a girls team won not only the volleyball state championship, but also the girls basketball championship in Mineota, my hometown, did that this year. Again, so for the, I'm not even sure what level it is, A, I think. So,
well, yeah. Congratulations yeah. to the teams. Any further announcements? If
what's the Vikings, by the way, the Vikings.
Oh, the Vikings, okay. And so also House File 2530 will come back and get another time, Representative Schultz. Members, thanks for the discussion today. We are adjourned.